Okay, welcome to our pre-show today. I'm playing a song. Anybody recognize that? No, you don't. Of course you don't. That's a group called The Fortunes, better known for a song they did called, I See That Worried Look Upon Your Face. You got your troubles, I got mine. Or in their Scottish brogue, you got your troubles, I got mine. That song there is called Freedom Come, Freedom Go. It's a cool little tune. And The Fortunes were a cool little band. There's actually some footage available of them performing live. They're kind of a good, I'd say good time music, you know. In fact, that's what one of the guys in the Love and Spoonful described it. Now, I'm talking about some real old shit here. So if you're young and, you know, you're like, what is Phil talking about now? This is shit. This is like my high school years. Love and Spoonful was a band that had come out in the late 60s. They were from New York. And they did Summer in the City, and they did, I don't know what songs you guys would know. Summer in the City was their most famous. Ah, shit. But anyway, they were a good time music band. The music they did made you kind of feel good. So anyway, welcome to our pre-show. This is the day before Thanksgiving. The pre-show today is going to be very short because the pre-show yesterday was fucking long. Was it? Or was it the post-show? The post-show was long, too. The post-show, I got into a whole bunch of bullshit. I don't even remember, man. But that's, you know, that's kind of what it's about. So yeah, here's a teeny bopper tune from when I was in high school. My kid sister Marianne, she would listen to this. Okay, that's, you know, when you heard that music, and I was a very, very serious young 16-year-old, so of course I would not be caught fucking dead listening to that shit. And we mocked it relentlessly, and you know, I was a Jimi Hendrix, Cream, Spirit, Santana fan. That was my period. And yeah, sure, I'd listen to the Beatles if it was any good. And the older I got, the better the Beatles sounded to me, you know, because they were originally a teeny bop band, too. Until the point in my life where I like everything they did. You know, I listened to all of their albums. But the Beatles, for me, at that age, didn't get good till Sgt. Pepper's. I guess that maybe that was the way it was for a lot of people. What is this? This is... I don't know. There's just, it's a very groovy thing. You know, there's all kinds of shit on here, man. You can get lost in memories. Here's one here. My baby loves me. You know this song? This is another teeny bop tune. Now, hold on. This is from my senior year in high school. Oh, my God. How did we fucking... I think, I don't know, the record business back then identified. I heard when I was, I don't know, a few years into my radio career, I heard it said that the number one record buyer in America was a 14-year-old black female. The number one purchaser of records in America was a 14-year-old African-American female, and she was buying 45s. Now, every kid bought 45s in those days. As did, when they could afford it, we bought albums, which were 33 and a third. That's RPMs, revolutions per minute. but the 45 was the disc the disc jockeys played. That's what they kept in the air studio. When they went for a song, it was generally they're pulling from a file of 45s. Okay. So they charted how many of those sell. Because if they counted the number of 45s that sold, they were right there in the wheelhouse of what America's musical taste was. And in the wheelhouse of that wheelhouse, driving the sales of those 45s was the teenage African-American female. Now, this is demographic research that I frankly was the first of its kind for me. I don't even think, even a few years into radio, I don't remember us busting things out in terms of race. Maybe they were, but I knew it was about the only demographics we had in those days were male, female, 18 to 34, 25 to 54, that kind of shit. Now, so you see, if you can say, well, this is the number one record buyer in America, then you gear, you steer, and you focus your music toward that customer. And you will see sales of that music reflected because she's a 14-year-old African-American female, so she's going to tend to... Now, if we're talking the early 70s, whatever, man, Kool and the Gang, everything from Kool and the Gang to Stevie Wonder, everything from Stevie Wonder to the three Degrees, I don't know, Al Wilson. I mean, Al Wilson's kind of rather adult, but he's the guy that did that song, Show and Tell, Just a Game I Play. I know I got a shitty voice, but I like to pretend like I got a good one. Stevie Wonder was really selling a lot of records in those days. However, I digress. The point I'm trying to make here is, I don't know how true that was. But then again, I'm thinking of 45s. We're not talking about album sales now. And when I got into album rock in the mid-70s, that's all we tracked. Albums. That's all we gave a shit about. Albums. That's all AOR Radio gave a shit about. Albums. Album sales. And we just dipped into the albums. We played whatever tracks. Some tracks became what were called top tracks. They were the hottest tracks off the album. When you had an album and the hottest fucking album to come along up to that point... The hottest fucking album to come along up to that point in the mid-1970s was Pink Floyd's Dark Side of the Moon. That album was a monster. And every track on that goddamn album got airplay on the album rock stations. But out there in 45 land was still the 14-year-old African-American female. And gradually, you saw formats beginning to differentiate even more the musical tastes of Americans, so that the 45 did not represent sales among everybody, I guess. It represented sales among a specific demographic. Now, did the sale of 45s ever truly reflect American musical taste? Who the fuck knows? This was the first time that I'd seen a demographic breakdown of record sales. And guaranteed, man, 14-year-old black females were not buying Dark Side of the Moon. Yes, there might have been one or two or three. There might have been a contingent of young 14-year-old females, no matter what race, buying Dark Side of the Moon. Perhaps. But that album was being sold to 18 to 34-year-old men, primarily. Then you had Frampton Comes Alive. That album was a fucking monster. A lot of you guys probably don't know this. Peter Frampton was the hottest goddamn thing in music in the mid-1970s. That cat's Frampton Comes Alive album, that live album, that I think was a double live album, sold in the millions. It's a platinum album, I think. I mean, it maybe even shipped out. I don't think it was shipped platinum, but it was platinum. And we played a lot. I was in Album Rock at the time. So we played Do You Feel Like We Do. We played Lines on My Face. We played Show Me the Way. I know we played more than just those three. There's a bunch of tracks from that album that we played. Just like on Dark Side of the Moon, we played Breathe. We played Us and Them. We played, Money, which was the big bust out top 40 track. Because what the state radio stations were, the top 40 radio stations, the stations that played those 45s that were selling, the stations that paid attention to the sale of 45s, suddenly recognized, hey, wait a minute. These songs are big, and they're not exactly selling them on 45s. Stairway to Heaven is another example. I don't think Stairway to Heaven ever charted as a top 40 record. It was not a top 40 selling song because Led Zeppelin didn't market it that way any more than Pink Floyd marketed Money to be a top 40. Those tracks just broke out from those albums as what we called top tracks. They got shit potload of airplay. And even probably got airplay on top 40 stations, so to speak, or so-called, I should say, because it was obvious and you could not avoid the fact that those songs were being played and listened to by a lot of people. There, I just told you every goddamn thing I know about radio, which ain't shit. Music radio, I should say. If I told you everything I know about radio, we'd be here forever. But about music radio, I don't know. Man, I don't know. I was a music director, too. I was music director at WSHE in Miami for about 6 months in 1978, before I split and went to California. I was a music director there. And I don't think I was a very good one, because I just added everything. Everything the record companies brought to me, I added. Yeah, sure, we'll play that. Oh, okay, we'll play that. Sure, we'll play that. I do recall, I did, and this didn't take a brain surgeon, but I do remember adding Sultan's of Swing by Dire Straits. That was, when you first heard that record, you went, I got to play that. Because the promo guys brought it in, you know, Warner Brothers or whoever the label was, they had their promo guys. The guys would come and say, here's what I got for you this week. Here's our latest record. And I know a lot of those guys. I knew them by their first names, and you know, we partied together, and they came in, and I remember the cat from Warner Brothers. Was it Warner Brothers at Dire Straits? Put on Sultan's of Swing. I said, well, that's going in today. That song was so absolutely, you know, an obviously a hit. The other one was, and I hated it, and everybody hated it, Do You Think I'm Sexy by Rod Stewart. I hated that motherfucking song, but we had to play it. And I think it was Rod Stewart's nod to disco, which really made it disgusting. So, yeah, man, Some Girls came out, I think, then, that season that I was at WSHE by the Stones that had, God damn it, you know the song. Shattered was on that album. What's the song that I'm trying to think of, though, the big hit? Start Me Up, right? Yeah, Start Me Up was on that album, Some Girls. Yeah. So there it is, folks, the history of Phil. And music radio, yay. Let's get going.